Welcome to Lawmen, a podcast about local legends and obscure curiosities from days of yore. I'm James Shakeshaft.
And I'm Alistair Beckett King.
And I'm going to take you to Kent, the Garden of England.
Kent is described as England's garden, but it's like one of those horrible gardens.
It's one of them front gardens that's weirdly full of toys in a sort of display.
It's got a washing machine. Or pampas grass.
Yeah, we all know what pampas grass means.
So that's Kent.
And this story is from the Isle of Sheppey, and it concerns an animal called Grey Dolphin.
Oh, yeah?
It's actually where I saw an Elvis impersonator, and the MC for the evening was a young Shane Ritchie.
Take it away.
Alistair, hello.
Hello, James.
I'm going to dispense with the formalities today. I'm going to get right into it. Are you ready?
Dispense with those formalities.
I'm popping them in the formality dispenser. Actually, no, that's the wrong thing. A formality dispenser you'd end up with more.
I say take the formalities, pop them in a little paper bag, swing it around on itself to create a nice lip.
Oh, nice.
Pop it to one side on the counter for later.
Yeah, because we're going to need them.
Yeah,
don't
yeah.
Dispense with them forever.
No.
But just pop them aside.
We wouldn't be in a formality dispensary if we weren't interested in formalities. But that's not for now. That's for another time.
Yeah, another day, another time. Today, I've got a story from the Isle of Sheppey.
Sheppey?
Do you know the Isle of Sheppey?
It is the name of the dog, as far as I'm aware.
I love Sheppey.
Is that the TV show set on Sheppey about a dog who solves mysteries?
That everyone loves, even the criminals.
Yeah.
That's the twist.
If I knew where Sheppey was, I would do the accent of those criminals being dragged away but still finding Sheppey adorable. Where is it?
It's Kent.
It's Kent.
Can you do a Kentish accent?
No, I hate older people of Kent. Can't stand Kent.
Okay, well,
I've died doing stand-up in too many Kent golf courses. I mean, I should have let them play golf, really, shouldn't I?
Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
I meant to say golf clubs, but that's confusing. Anyway, the people of Kent do not enjoy my brand of off-key whimsy.
Well, that's where my dad lives.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, Daddy Shakes, but you know full well that your dad would despise my stand-up.
I don't know, actually. Surprisingly, like, he's quite into some quite odd stuff. Like,
he's into bad comedy.
My favourite conversation with him was when he was like, have you seen this Harry Hill guy?
Nothing about his accent makes me expect that he would like Harry Hill.
Well, that's the thing. You can't tell people with people these days.
Well, I've learned a little lesson about judging people, making assumptions.
So, we're talking the Isle of Sheppey, off the coast of Kent, kind of in the sort of Thames estuary bit. It's 32 square miles, the Isle of Sheppey, which is approximately, I thought I'd break it down and make it contextual for you. It's approximately the size of 11,700 football pitches. Yeah? You getting an idea now?
Not really.
It's approximately the size of Manhattan.
Okay, yeah.
It's approximately the size of a very, very, very big grapefruit. You're getting an idea now.
I'm getting a picture.
Getting a feel for it.
Now I've got an image in my mind.
The Lord of Sheppey.
What? Is that title still in current parlance? The Lord of Sheppey?
I'm not sure, actually. Back in 1300,
oh, yeah,
the Lord was Sir Robert de Sherland. He was a small man with a big temper, and he had a powerful kick. His kick was so powerful, he could kick over a cow. Yeah.
Wow. What could the cow possibly have done to incur his wrath?
Oh, chewing? Was he chewing in class?
Oh, yeah. I hope you brought enough cud for everyone.
Sick some back up from one of its stomachs.
That's disgusting. I'm kicking you over.
Kick you right over. As in kick it over, as in just like kick it over, not like kick it over a fence or a barn or something. Just kicked it over.
Yeah, not hoofing it.
But that's pretty powerful. I'm not sure many people think, yeah, I could probably kick a cow over. If they do, they're wrong.
Mm, absolutely.
I'm going to do a bunch of flashbacks in this story, by the way.
Okay.
So prepare yourself for some challenging storytelling.
All right, Quinnerton Tarantana. Okay, so wait, are we doing flashbacks from now, the present, or are we doing flashbacks from the 1300s?
The 1300s is going to be our now.
Okay.
And we're going to sort of dance around that time.
Nice.
Right now, we're in a graveyard, and Sir Robert de Sherland is kicking an 18-stone monk into an open grave, and that monk's dying.
What?
What could make a man that angry? flashback.
Oh, wow. This is like the... Yeah. And now it's like so many days earlier where we find out what the monk did.
A beach in Chatham. The corpse of a sailor is washed ashore and he's taken up and buried in the churchyard at Chatham. And then a couple of nights later, the clerk of that church is doing some stuff at his desk late at night with the candle glowing and he hears a tap, tap, tapping at the window.
Wait, are you doing that?
Yeah.
Okay.
And he looks up and it's the Virgin Mary.
Oh, yeah?
Outside his window. Tap, tap, tapping.
Well, if anyone knows about getting unexpectedly knocked up, there you go, an actual joke.
That's a very good joke.
How many episodes did that take for me to think of an actual joke?
70. And that was because Chatham had quite an elaborate shrine to Mary.
Oh, yeah, naturally, that's where she would go.
She came round to the clerk, knocked on his window and told him he had to dig that sailor up because he was a sinner. And he was tainting the churchyard. She didn't want him so close to her shrine. And I quote, "This sinful person's ghastly grinning."
Ugh.
Was, and end of quote, getting right on her.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to say?
No, you can't say.
We can't refer to the Virgin Mary's.
No, I don't think you can say that.
Okay.
In podcast form.
Even in a colloquial way. He's getting right on. He's getting on her nerves.
Yeah, fine.
So.
It was his leering smile.
He was like just grinning.
Like a stranger on the bus, just grinning at the Virgin Mary.
Yeah.
She didn't like it.
Yeah, she did not like it. So the clerk dug the body up and threw it back in the river. And it washed up on Sheppey. Smash cut. Sir Robert de Sherland is eating oysters.
Oh, he's not kicking anything this time.
Not right now. Not yet.
He's kicking oysters into his mouth.
Maybe stamping on them so they flip up and sort of flip the oysters.
Like he was a cartoon.
Yeah, and a messenger comes to him and says, "Father Fothergill is not going to bury the body." Sir Robert de Sherland flies into a rage, probably kicks over the table with the plate of oysters on it, and he goes to get his sword out to kill this messenger. Unfortunately, I think he thinks twice this time, and he goes straight to Father Fothergill, who is the 18-stone monk we saw in the earlier bit get kicked into the open grave.
By the way, just a quick question. I don't understand imperial measurements. So how much is 18 stone? Is that a normal weight for a monk?
Oh, no. Well, I don't know about monks specifically, but 18 stone is 2 stone more than me.
Oh, right. You're fairly tall.
And this guy wasn't that tall, so he's quite big.
Right, okay. He's hefty. He's sort of Friar Tuck sized.
Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
So my 5-year-old is just coming up to 3 stone.
All right. So I would have no trouble kicking your 5-year-old.
So he's 6 5-year-olds.
I could definitely kick 6 5-year-olds into a grave as long as I did it one at a time.
He's approximately 6 5-year-olds or a really quite big grapefruit.
Okay, I've got it in my mind now. Please continue.
He's saying, "This is the grinning sailor. You remember from Chatham and the Virgin Mary and that other Bible guy. We can't bury him. He's been rejected by both land and sea."
Ooh, great line.
Sir Robert de Sherland flies into a temper. Mm. Now we realise we're back at the beginning,
yep.
And we're seeing him kicking that 18-stone monk into the grave. There's a sickening crunch. The monk's broken his neck.
Oh, he probably didn't mean to do that.
I think he did.
It was probably just a light-hearted kick between mates.
And then he's starting to bury him, presumably again by kicking the dirt into the grave.
Yep, yep.
A couple of nights later, an angry mob arrive at Sir Robert de Sherland's door.
Bing bong. Who is it?
Hello.
It's the mob. Mob here.
Are you the guy that killed that vicar? Yes. Right, okay. Can you sign here, please? Yep. I'm just going to need to take a picture of you by your doorway.
I was expecting an angry mob, and they said they'd be there between 8 and midday, and it's 5 p.m, the angry mob still hasn't arrived, and I could have done stuff today, but I've had to be in all day.
I went to the loo once, and I came down, and there was a card saying, "We, the angry mob, are sorry we missed you, but we're attacking your neighbour."
Yeah, there's a pitchfork in your neighbour.
Or come along to the local sorting office to get attacked.
But bring ID.
Oh, yeah. So they attack Robert de Sherland to give sort of mob justice. He beats them all.
They made a mistake of going on him one at a time, so he could just...
Kick him.
Hoof him left, right and centre. Kick, 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 kick.
But he realised, whilst he's quite good at fighting off angry mobs, Robert de Sherland, he needed the king's pardon. And it was very fortunate that King Edward I was sailing nearby. He was sailing past Sheppey to go and inspect some boats or something. So Sir Robert de Sherland, also very handily, came from a long line of horse breeders that specialised in breeding swimming horses.
What?
He came from a long line of horse breeders that specialised in breeding swimming horses.
No.
Sorry, is it a bad line?
Up until now, I have to say, your storytelling has been on point. But in terms of exposition, you can't bring aquatic horses in now. I needed to hear that earlier. You can't just go, oh, by the way, swimming horses. I mean, I know horses can swim over short distances, but still.
He saddled up his favourite swimming horse.
Not a thing.
Grey Dolphin. And got on it, and it swam out to the king's boat, and he got his pardon, and it swam him back again.
The king didn't do an awful lot of research there.
No, he just thought, that's impressive. I have never seen a swimming horse before.
Just, psh, psh, psh. Your Majesty, what's going on down there?
I mean, I've heard of seahorses, right, guys?
And then probably after all the high-fiving, there wasn't that much time to investigate the actual claim.
Yeah, yeah, have your pardon. And then when Sir Robert de Shurland got back to shore on Grey Dolphin...
Sorry, can I be clear? Is Grey Dolphin really the horse's name?
Yes.
What? I assumed you'd made that up sarcastically to make fun of the concept.
Oh, no. Oh, I forgot to mention earlier, this is reported in the Ingoldsby Legends.
Oh, of course, the Ingoldsby Legends.
Your favourite and mine. This is tale number 2 or 3, Grey Dolphin.
It's the name of the story, Grey Dolphin.
I'm yet to read The Maid's Story or Look at the Clock.
I'm so excited for Look at the Clock.
Look at the Clock.
I just can't imagine what could happen in it.
Or the Legend of a Shirt. Oh, should we have a little Ingoldsby sidebar?
Sure.
Just briefly. I found out a little bit more about the Ingoldsby Legends. I didn't know that much about them before. So they were written under the pen name of Ingoldsby by a vicar who had been a bit of a boy when he was younger.
A classic lad.
Absolute. Lad.
What a legend.
He'd been orphaned.
Classic.
And he started squandering his family's money, carousing, gambling, drinking. And then he realised the errors of his ways and he rebadged himself as a vicar and moved to Kent. But then he got a bit bored, so he decided to write stories. But realising he already had a bit of a reputation, he needed to sort of disguise who he was. So he wrote it under a pseudonym of Ingoldsby. Mm-hmm. And one of his first stories was published in a magazine that was edited by young Charles Dickens.
Oh.
Of Charles Dickens fame.
Yeah, yeah. Young Charlie D.
Chucky Dick.
I don't think they called him that.
I think they did, going by his reputation. Also, Charles Dickens helped maintain the mystique by saying that he had no idea who Ingoldsby was, because people sort of worked out that Ingoldsby wasn't the real person, and they wondered who the real person behind Ingoldsby was, and Charles Dickens claimed that he didn't know, sort of kind of keeping the legend going.
You would be able to tell if Charles Dickens had invented the character, because he would be called, like, Mr. Fizzlewazzle.
Yes.
You can tell if it's a made-up person. All of Charles Dickens's lies would be obvious. Where were you? Oh, I was hanging out with my friend, Jorben Bingleding.
If Charles Dickens had heard of the Boaty McBoatface saga, he wouldn't have seen a problem. He'd have said, that's a great name for a boat.
The people these days who sound like Charles Dickens characters are all American Republicans. Mm. You know, like Newt Gingrich. They all have names like Hunch Powers.
Or there's the American man who I used to own a football club called Randy Lerner.
Hey, we all have different learning styles, James.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, back to the story. That was an unexpected flashback.
Unexpected Ingoldsby sidebar.
That was more like you got a bit bored during the film and you Wikipedia'd a few of the actors. Anyway, back to the story. So, a wet Robert de Shurland is there on his wet swimming horse. And then...
I haven't bedded into the film world. Where a swimming horse is an acceptable thing.
That's the leap that you have to make.
Yeah, that's a suspension of disbelief.
But all the stories say that he got his horse to swim out to the boat and back.
Mm.
And then one of the versions I've read is that he comes from a long line of swimming horse breeders.
Because you think if you lived on an island, you'd think they would have boats.
Yeah.
And you'd think that would be your way, the medium of conveyance.
Yeah. Or an animal that was better suited to swimming.
Yeah. Or maybe a boat.
A horse has got to be the least swimmy animal.
Or you could do like a carriage. You could just get your swimming horses and then tie them to your boat and just...
Ah, whoosh. That's a good idea.
Like a dolphin sled.
You'd think you need something with wider paws, though.
Yeah.
The horses' spindly little legs don't think they'd be grabbing.
Presumably they bred them to have really wide legs.
Flappy hooves. Sort of like crossbreeding horses with bats.
Yeah, it's simply science, James.
Yeah, it's just science. Right, and so he's back on the beach, but there on the beach now is an old crone who's cackling away, and she says to him, "Hey, your horse has saved you, but it'll kill you in the end."
That was really good. I really liked that voice.
So Robert de Sherlock's like, right, fine. Gets his sword out, cuts his horse's head off.
What?
Yeah.
Just because they're on the say-so of a crone?
Hey, it's going to kill him. And he goes on with his life, carries on with his life, just leaves it there as well.
Okay.
Some people say he buries it on the beach, but most of them sort of imply he just wanders off.
He kicks it into the sea.
No, he definitely doesn't.
Oh, okay.
Because many years later, he's riding past on another horse that he doesn't like as much.
A land horse of some kind, or...?
This is presumably some sort of standard land horse.
Right,
yeah.
Okay.
And he goes past that point and he sees the skull of Grey Dolphin, and sat on that skull is that witch again, and she's cackling again.
Yeah.
As he gets off his horse and he runs over to give her a big old kick.
She's like a giant golf ball on a little bone tee.
But as he goes to kick her, she vanishes and he boots the skull so hard that a tooth goes through his boot and into his foot, and he gets gangrene and he dies.
Kills him dead.
Kills him stone dead. And that's the story of Sir Robert de Sherland. You can find his tomb in a church on Sheppey.
The door says, "Kick three times to enter."
At his feet on the tomb.
I wouldn't go anywhere near his feet.
Well, it's like one of them ones where they got like the stone model of what's inside on the top.
Oh, yeah.
And at the feet of that is a horse's head rising from the waves.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah.
I do like those sort of frozen in carbonite tombs they used to do.
The less realistic ones, the better, though.
The sort of the MS Paint job versions, yeah, where it's like, yeah, he's got eyes, hasn't he? What do you want? I can't do dogs from the front.
But no, he's got a horse's head rising from the waves at the bottom of his. And the church has a weather vane, which is a little model of Grey Dolphin.
Ah.
As a little postscript, little post-credit sequence, the body of the grinning sailor washes up again in Gillingham, and they bury it in Gillingham Church.
Yeah.
And in Gillingham Church, they had a magic cross that did miracles.
Mm-hmm.
A full-size Jesus cross that did miracles.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You want to go for the full size when you're ordering.
Yeah, I know.
It costs more.
But it's that incremental thing that they do with coffees, that the full-size one, it's only about, like, 70p more than a little cross.
Exactly. Go grande.
But they just know that you're going to justify it
for
yourself. And so, yeah, that used to do miracles until they buried the grinning sailor in their churchyard. And then it stopped doing miracles.
I see. So just to hold you to account here, James, the proof of the sailor's evil is that the church didn't experience any miracles.
Yep, no more miracles there. Mm,
compelling.
You go there looking for a miracle, you're not going to find one.
Wow, well, that definitely means the sailor was evil.
Exactly. Finally, you're on side. Like when he went to kick that witch that wasn't there.
Yeah, oh yeah, yeah.
Proof
that the witch is there. What a horrible man.
Who? Sir Robert de Sherland?
Sir Robert de Sherland. What an awful man.
But he died.
Horrible, horrible story. He did die, but not early enough in the story for me. I don't know if that is that comeuppance.
He died doing what he loved.
Kicking stuff.
Kicking things.
Yeah. I tell you what, I didn't like the people of Kent before, and I haven't changed my mind.
Score time.
Come on, kick him towards me.
You're going to kick a 5 right back at me. 4, supernatural.
Supernatural, okay. We've got a mysterious witch crone character.
We've got a random witch.
Making prophecies, yeah.
Yeah.
She's got no backstory. We don't really know what her motivations are, except to do evil.
She's an agent of chaos.
We've got the Virgin Mary, her apparition.
Yep.
The opposite end of the spectrum when it comes to supernatural ladies.
Yes.
AKA women.
We've got a grinning sailor.
Yeah, we've got the grinning sailor.
He's going to mess up your cross.
Oh, yeah, he's upset 3 different burial grounds.
Yeah, he's wreaking havoc in the Thames estuary area.
Yeah, and what else? Swimming horses is pretty weird.
I mean, it's pretty impressive kicking power.
Yeah.
But I don't think that's supernatural amount of kicking power, I think.
No, you don't believe that kicking a monkey over is supernatural? Remembering that's the equivalent of 5 toddlers.
I'm not saying it's justified, but I don't think it's unnatural.
You don't think it's unnatural?
It's a kick a monk.
So what you're saying is kicking a monk is natural.
It's the natural way of things.
It's just youthful high spirits. It's boys being boys. Who among us that he who has never kicked a monk?
Come and kick this monk. You should try it. It's brilliant.
Monk kicker. Blah, blah, blah. He's such a villain.
He's the man. The man who kicks a monk.
Awful guy. I'm going to say it's a 3 for Supernatural.
A 3?
Yeah, because that's what I think you would give me.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough.
Yeah, because you'd be like, well, there weren't really any ghosts.
There weren't any ghosts, but it wasn't like a standard humdrum history.
It was not a standard humdrum history, no. It was full of colour and excitement. Yeah, it's a 3. It's a decent 3. Well done.
It's a decent 3. Okay, naming.
Naming. I got DeSherland. Grey Dolphin. That's a really good / confusing name for a horse.
Yeah.
It's like dolphins are grey. Mm. Just say dolphin.
Horse that's a bit like a dolphin. Brackets, it's good at swimming.
Just call it that. Just call it horse that's a bit like a dolphin. Brackets, that's good at swimming.
Don't call it a seahorse.
No, that's going to
that. We've used that
that's
one.
That's going to be confusing.
What about Father Fothergill?
Father Fothergill, not bad. Daddy Fothers.
I Love Sheppy. The Grinning Sailor.
The Grinning Sailor is the best because it sounds like the name of a haunted pub.
But Robert de Sherland, I was thinking as well, the Sher, is that the same Sher as your Sherburn Sher?
And does it have the same meaning as the Sher in Sherburn?
Yes. Also, in speaking to Jimmy Shakeshaft, East End Gangster, he's from Shoreditch area originally, and the shore in Shoreditch refers to sewer, refers to your Sher.
Oh, really?
Because it was the sewer ditch. That's why it was like the poor people area.
Because
it was basically the where everyone dumped their poo from the posh bits of London.
So Shoreditch is actually ditch.
Yes. And Robert de Land.
I would find that believable, frankly. That first of all, it would explain why he's on an island away from everyone else.
Yep. And he's such a...
He's awful. He really... What an awful guy.
Yeah.
Awful.
I think that gets me surely some extra naming points.
It's 4 out of 5 for names.
Okay, then. Next category. Guys, listen to women, will you?
First of all, I endorse the category.
Good.
High fives all round.
Mm-hmm. A high five?
No, I'm not scoring yet. Nope. Don't try and trick me.
Thought I could...
Don't try and trick me. I've got a short memory. It's not fair. Listen to women. So, the crone.
Listen, she's right. She was right.
She was right. However, had he not listened to her...
He wouldn't have cut the head off.
Yeah, it's sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy, isn't it? She tricked him, really.
But maybe it would have got him another way.
I mean, it had ample opportunities to drown him while they were swimming.
That's true.
And then there's the Virgin Mary. They listen to her.
They listen to her. Don't leave this grinning sailor here. You'll ruin your cross.
No miracles is kind of standard, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a standard amount of miracles.
And then look what happened when it washed up in Sheppey.
I've forgotten what actually happened.
The trouble it caused.
It washed up. What happened?
I don't know if I just skipped over the bit in the Ingoldsby where it explained why Sherland was so keen on burying the grinning sailor in his church.
Did it cause the amount of trouble that an unexpected body washing up would have caused, and no more?
How many episodes of Bergerac does a body wash up and then a monk gets kicked into a grave?
I haven't seen that before.
I haven't seen that before. That is unexpected.
Yeah, I can see why you put the monk kicking in the cold open.
That's the big bit, isn't it?
I'll stay through the ad break just to find out who kicked that monk and why.
Why is he kicking a monk into an open grave?
He can't possibly have a reason. Oh, but wait.
Oh, and a little sidebar on the old grinning sailor. After they buried it in Gillingham and it broke their cross, they tried to dig it out, but it just kept sinking further and further.
That's disgusting and spooky.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, so I think it's actually a 1 out of 5 for Listen to Women, but I think that sounds bad.
That is, I thought
sounds
I was
bad for
get...
the podcast. So I'm going to go with I'm going to go with another 3 just out of embarrassment.
Good lad. Final category. It's all kicking off.
Oh, there was a lot of kicking.
There's a lot of kicks.
What a kicky story.
We've got kicked cows. We've got kicked monks. We've got kicked oysters, potentially. I might have made that bit up. We've got kicked dirt.
Mob, an entire mob.
We've got kicked mobs. We've got kicked skulls. How do you swim? What's half of swimming?
You're damn right. It's kicking.
Especially if you're a horse.
Yeah.
It's kicking, isn't it? That horse is kicking.
We've got a man who literally kicked himself to death.
Yeah.
How is that possible? He did it. He found a way. So much did he love kicking.
And I bet after he realised that crone's prophecy had come true through his own actions, I bet he wanted to blooming kick himself.
You're right. He would have been kicking himself after that.
It's the only thing he knew. It's all in you.
No, you're absolutely right. I'm lining up a 5 and I'm booting it your way.
Oosh.
There you go.
and I'm controlling
it. Oh, nice.
And passing it on the diagonals.
Oh, yeah. Good. Making space.
Yeah. Little triangles, making little triangles, playing it into space.
Making space.
Yeah.
When I was playing football as a kid, that's what it always was. Make space, which I think means get away from the ball.
Get off the pitch. You get off the
pitch. You haven't made enough space. I'm on the white line. Continue to make space. Get over there in the Greggs. That will be enough space.
There weren't Greggs when we were kids, were there?
I was in the north. We've always had Greggs.
It hadn't spread south.
So you may have adopted Greggs, but I was born there. Probably wasn't Greggs, I don't know.
That sounds like something Batman would say, but not about Greggs.
I haven't watched all the Batman films, but he's never mentioned Greggs at any point. Because the problem I had in football is I'm quite tall. Mm. So as I came up behind someone to sort of challenge them, my shadow would fall across the pitch before them.
Oh.
And I distinctly remember someone looking over their shoulder and then going, oh, it's you.
Oh.
And then realising I wasn't going to be able to successfully tackle. And at that point, I realised that the occlusion of light was the main thing I brought to the game of football.
So did you just start running alongside the striker to keep the light out of his eyes so that he could concentrate on scoring?
Like a parasol, yeah.
Basically, you were superseded by the peaked cap.
Yeah, they put me out of business. Back on the bench. I was so bad at it when I was in primary school.
How bad were you?
I decided to be the referee, so I made red and yellow cards to give red and yellow cards. And I got a whistle.
Oh, and, no.
I didn't have the innate authority.
No.
To
the gravitas.
I didn't have the gravitas as a kid.
Did you try and recruit a couple of other nerds to be linesmen?
Exactly. The people
lesser
who were even
nerds.
Lower down on the pecking order than me.
Was it a piece of card that you coloured in with a felt tip pen?
Oh, no, proper coloured card. So I'd shelled out.
So you had like the rest of the A3 piece of card?
Yep.
With just a small...
With a small little corner cut out, yeah.
Did you laminate them?
No, I'm not mad.
No, I'm not deep. I'm not sad.
All right, square. The laminator. Never laminated anything in my life. You've been listening to Lawmen, a podcast by me, Alistair Beckett King.
And me, James Shakeshaft. That was a good story, I thought.
I thought so too.
Very kicky.
Hey, don't kick kids.
Don't kick kids.
If you'd like to end the kicking and bring peace to the world, you can support the Lawmen podcast.
If you go to patreon.com/lawmenpod, there's a myriad of choices of ways that you can support us and help us keep the podcast going.
And if you'd like to hinder the podcast, meet us every Wednesday night out by the bins.
Bring your kicking shoes.
While preparing this episode of the Lawmen Chronicles, I mentioned the 1968 Iron Butterfly song Inagada Da Vida. James Shakeshaft seemed not entirely familiar with that particular track and asked me to start the recording. Here's what happened next.
I want this on record.
Well, it's just Inagada Da Vida.
Inagada Da Vida.
No, Inagada Da Vida.
Inagada
Da Vida, baby.
Inagada Da Vida.
Don't you know that I love you?
So what is Inagada Da Vida?
What does it mean?
Yeah.
I think it means in the Garden of Eden, but it's not. It's not in the
is
Garden
it like
of Eden.
Bad Dido? Was it written by the same person that named the Bad Didos? Inagada Da Vida, baby.
It's the... It's very much the Bad Dido of biblical gardens, yes. Inagada Da Vida. But the weird thing about it is those are the lyrics. Inagada Da Vida, don't you know that I love you? Inagada Da Vida, don't you know that I'll always be true? And that's basically all the lyrics in the song. The song is like 12 minutes long.
And half of it's in what sounds like a made-up language.
It is amazing.
Is it an actual language?
I don't think it's a real language. You're not being offensive there.
Good. But
I just wish it was the 60s. I wish you could be in the office where they have to like pitch their new albums to like the suits who don't understand the pot-smoking kids. Well, they have to go like, okay, so it's called Inagada Da Vida, and it's 12 minutes long.
Do you mean in the Garden of Eden?
No, 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 square.
Inagada Da Vida.
Inagada Da Vida.
Think about the SEOs.
How long is it? And the great thing about the comment centre in YouTube, it's all people going like, this is so much better than the radio edit, which is 2 minutes long, and it's just like the three verses, whereas the proper version is those three verses and then just 12 minutes of acid noodling on the guitar, because it goes on for flipping ages. It's like Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands, but at least Dylan wrote different words for each verse.
Sad-Eyed Lady of the Lowlands.